And we're so happy to have online, actually from England. I know it's a little late for him over there. It's 6 hours later than what we have right now. Professor Bruce Bradley, he is the Associate Professor of Experimental Archaeology at the University of Exeter in England. He's also a co-author of a new book called Across Atlantic Ice, The Origin of America's Clovis Culture, along with Dennis Stanford, who is an archaeologist from the Smithsonian Institute. Professor Bradley, it's so nice to have you on our program.
Good evening.
Back in 1970, and that's 42 years ago, the crew of a trawler, a Virginia scallop trawler called the Sinmar, hauled in a mastodon tusk onto its deck, along with a little dark tapered blade about 8 inches long, and the blade was still sharp. It seems that this blade now, as I mentioned, 42 years later, has kind of reopened the debate on just who the first Americans were. When did you become aware of this find, and when did it dawn on you just how important it could be?
Well, this was about 2 years ago. A colleague, Darren Lowry, was the one that noticed it in a museum in Maryland, or maybe Maryland or Virginia, I can't remember, and thought, oh, isn't this an odd thing? And he'd been talking to my co-author, Dennis Stanford, and working with him a bit. And he's also found a whole number, sequence of archaeological sites along the Delmarva Peninsula that look like they date 21, 22,000 years old. So when he saw this in the case, he was thinking, wow, this could be something old. And then he started to do the research on it and find out who found it, when they found it, etc. And since that time, we've done a lot of tests on this particular piece. We know exactly where it came from on the ocean floor. We know how deep it was. It's 250 feet deep now. And that happens to be on what used to be the shoreline back about 20, 22,000 years ago. So got thinking, well, unless somebody dropped it overboard sometime from something, it must be quite old. And so the tests that have been done now indicate that it was went through a whole series of situations, environments, after it was lost or left behind. And then it had to be inundated by the ocean at least 14,500 years ago, which makes it 1,000 years older than what we thought was the earliest people in North America, which is Clovis.
Now I don't believe you can carbon date stone. This was a stone tool?
Correct. That's correct. No, we didn't get a date on the stone itself. What we were able to do is able to date the landform that it was on based on sea rise and fall. And then we're also, Darren was also able to reconstruct that it had been buried underneath a salt peat deposit for a while because of the way the color changed. It's called patination on that particular stone. And then it was re-exposed and oxidized on the surface, and then it was inundated. And all of that together, plus a 21,000-year-old date on the mastodon tusk, gives us a pretty good idea that it's probably that old. But it, at the very least, it's 14,500 years old.
Could you go over briefly what our standard thought has been about where the first Americans came and when that happened?
All the textbooks have it pretty much the same, and that's about 13,500 years ago, people were supposed to have come across the Bering Strait, which is between Siberia and Alaska, which at that time, the seawater was lower, and so it was connected by land there, although there was a lot of glacial ice, etc. And then they would supposedly came in inland through Alaska and down through a corridor between the two major glaciers in Canada at the time, and then into North America and then spread across all of the Americas within 1,000 years or 500 years from there. And it's in all the textbooks. The problem is that the archaeology doesn't support it for a number of reasons that we've now discovered. One of which is that we have materials in South America that are older than that, in southern Chile, that we've known about for about 15 years now. And now we're getting all these really old sites in the east and even down into Texas, where I'm a co-director of a site outside of Austin, where we're getting 15,000-year-old dates. And it's below Clovis, which is the 13,500. So everything's completely opened up.
Wow. This has really kind of turned the whole field on end.
Yeah, these sorts of things happen, though. When we think we know what everything was, then we find a new discovery, and this is what's kind of fun about archaeology is we work from the evidence that we have. So the evidence has changed, and so our interpretations need to change with them.
Huh. So this really adds possibly like 7,000 more years on having a man on the American continents.
That's correct, and that 7,000 years, now we have to start asking ourselves, why haven't we found more archaeological sites in that 7,000 years? And one of the possibilities is that when people came here, if they came across, as we're interpreting, came across the North Atlantic following sea ice, that they hit the northeast coast, and they maintained a coastal way of life for a very, very long time. It would have been quite a rich environment, and there wasn't a whole lot of need to move inland. And so people may have been on the coast primarily for most of that time, although we're now finding older sites as well inland, but older than Clovis, that is, and just were invisible. But it's also because they're now, you know, submerged on the ocean. But it's also because we got stuck in the idea that we knew what the answer was, that when we would excavate a Clovis site, we wouldn't go any deeper, because why go deeper? There can't be anything older. So now that we're going deeper, below Clovis levels, in some places we're starting to find evidence that people were there several thousand years earlier. So, again, a lot of times our ideas about what we think we know influence how we go about looking for things.
When you refer to the Clovis culture, what are we talking about there?
Okay, this is a Stone Age culture, which simply means that they didn't have metal. They were hunters and gatherers, and they're best known for the sites that we find primarily in the western United States, where they were killing mammoths. It happens now, we used to think that Clovis was centered in the western United States, but we now know from the archaeological evidence that it seems that Clovis developed in the southeastern United States, actually had a much denser population there than they ever had in the West. And when they were living there in the southeastern United States, they primarily were generalists, is what that means, is they were hunting and gathering anything that was edible, basically. So we see a difference between Western Clovis and Eastern Clovis. In the West, they were big game hunters, and in the East, they were generalists. Now, what we don't know is if the people in the West actually lived there or they just foraged there. They went out on hunting trips. But they did, Clovis did make it all the way from wherever they started, which we think is in the southeastern United States, and we have it in Washington State, not very much, but it's there, and all the way down to Venezuela on the east side of Mexico, all the way down to Venezuela. So it got through many, many, many different environments and seemed to have been successful in all of those environments.
Now, does your theory mean that the origins of the Clovis culture could actually have started much earlier than thought and could be the folks that came from the Atlantic?
That's correct. That's what our hypothesis is. The evidence is pointing that direction. And one of the reasons it's pointing that direction, besides the dates being much earlier than Clovis now, those dates are on the East Coast. And the materials that we're finding, the artifacts that we're finding, are very similar and almost identical to artifacts at the same time in southwestern Europe, in southwestern France and northern Spain. And this is why we're drawing a line across from there. Whereas at the time that we're talking about, 21,000 years ago, we have no evidence of anybody in Alaska, northeastern Asia. So if they're going to have ancestors for the people on the East Coast and we have nobody at this point in time older in the West, then we have to look east. And we have a virtually identical archaeological expression in southwestern Europe. And that's why we're saying, gosh, guys, it looks like people came from southwestern Europe.
Wow. What would that part of America have looked like to these people landing, let's say, 22,000 years ago?
Well, it, of course, would have had a lot of varied ecological zones, but you would have had the glaciers at their maximum extent. So they would have extended in the center of the state, I mean, in the center of the United States where you are, all the way down to southern Wisconsin. So that would have been under glaciers, right, all the way across Michigan, into Pennsylvania, upper New York State, and across there to the ocean, and then all the way up. So that would have been all under glaciers at 22,000. Right, so when the people came following the ice front, they would have been following ice all the way down, probably from Labrador all the way down to the northeast United States, at which point they would have hit land. And once they hit land, they had a new continent.
Wow. We're speaking with Professor Bruce Bradley. He's the Associate Professor of Experimental Archaeology at the University of Exeter over in England, and he's staying up late to talk to us here tonight.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, it's pretty much under glacier most of the continent. However, where they came on land, obviously they found a mastodon bone. There had to be life to sustain them.
That's correct. The life, actually, the sea life across the front of that the ice in the North Atlantic would have been an incredibly rich environment. It would have been a difficult and dangerous environment at times, but it would have been very rich with seals, the great auk, which is now extinct northern Atlantic penguin, and many, many other animals. So they could have been making their living on that sea ice. And so what we're not saying is that people got in boats in Spain and the whole group migrated across to North America. That's not what we're saying at all. What we're saying is that as people in that part of the world, which was also stressed because of the glacial advance, started learning how to exploit those sea animals, they eventually, by extending their hunting territory, eventually ended up finding land on this side. Over where I am, not where you are, in Europe. I mean, I'm sorry, where you are. They eventually found land where you are from land over here. And then through several thousand years of exploiting that seafront, they sort of established a territory in the North Atlantic, which was tethered to both sides on land. But then, as our hypothesis goes, as the glacial period ended and the glaciers started to retreat and the sea ice started to retreat annually, it became untenable to keep going back and forth. There weren't open water sailing. That's not what we're saying. We're saying they were following the ice. So once the ice started to retreat too far, then there was no value. I mean, it was getting too risky to continue to do that. But that left people here.
Right.
I mean, there. Here meaning there.
Yeah, right where we're at, not where you're at.
Right, exactly. There would have still been people over here, of course.
Sure.
And it looks like that probably eventually broke that connection, but it left a population in North America. And it was that population that then eventually evolved into or turned into Clovis. Now, it looks like there were many things going on there, and Clovis is just one of the expressions of what happened when people moved into the continent, and then that all the way down to South America as well. So it's turning out to be rather complex, at least from our point of view. Now, I must say that there are quite a few critics of this particular hypothesis, and it's just starting to really develop the debate, and we're looking at ways of getting the evidence to settle that debate, and it's going to be probably years, if not decades, before it all gets sorted out. But at least now we're looking, and that's different from what we were doing just a few years ago when we knew the answer.
You mentioned that some of the artifacts that you're finding along the Atlantic correspond to similar artifacts that are found in France and Spain, I believe.
That's correct.
And I believe you call them the Salustrians?
Salustrian, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, have you found any skeletal remains in Europe of that culture?
No, that's the interesting thing. We have no skeletal remains of the Salustrian, the Clovis, what we're calling the pre-Clovis, nor do we have any from Northeast Asia, Beringia at the same time, all the way through Clovis. The oldest human remains that we have in the North America is about 10,000, maybe 10,200 years old, which is still, you know, several thousand years younger than Clovis, and many thousands of years younger than what we have. So the human, the actual human component of it is missing everywhere.
Yeah. It seems to me as I know there's a lot of artifacts in many places over here. Mm-hmm. And finally, one from 1970 is actually spotted by, as you mentioned, Mr. Lowry, and brought to your attention. I'm assuming that there's a lot of others out there that have not been connected to the same idea.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, what we don't see is we don't see Asian-derived artifacts until about 13,000 years ago in Alaska. And then after that, we see an expansion into North America on the west coast, in the west side of North America. And so we have an Asian migration. I hate that term because it sounds like everybody picked up and left. But we have Asian populations moving into North America on the west and west coast. Well, we had, I wouldn't say European because that makes it sound like modern Europeans. We had people from Europe moving into, this is our hypothesis anyhow, moving into the east across the Atlantic, maybe a little early, maybe several thousand years earlier, but eventually they quit coming over from the European continent, but they didn't quit coming over from the Asian continent. So we have, from that, when they first came about 13,000 years ago, archaeology and many other scientists have documented several waves of migrants from Asia across into North America, so that most modern Native American peoples are descended from the Asian side.
Wow. I'm assuming, as I mentioned in the earlier question, that as you said, this debate is going to go on starting now, but there's going to be a lot more evidence that pops up now that folks can relate things to a new theory.
Yes, I think that is the case, and that's the way science tends to work. Ideally, science works in that sort of it grows by increments. You get a little bit new data, and you change your interpretations and theories a little bit, but it doesn't really work that way a lot of times. A lot of times it gets stuck in a paradigm, what we call a paradigm, a set of knowledge, and then it takes a major discovery to really break that into, and then you get into something new, and then you get a shift in the way people think, and all of a sudden there's all this data that supports the new paradigm. And then that gets stuck. And so it sort of goes by, you know, leaps and bounds, and it leaps forward, then it plateaus out, and we don't get anywhere, usually for a generation or more, because we're set in our thinking, and then it takes off again. So I think this is one of those points where our thinking is taking off again, and we'll just see what the evidence eventually brings us. We may end up going back to the people came mostly from Asia and didn't come from the European continent at all. But right now, our best read on the evidence is that people did come from the European continent.
We've been speaking with Professor Bruce Bradley. He is the Associate Professor of Experimental Archaeology at the University of Exeter in England, co-author of Across Atlantic Ice, The Origin of America's Clovis Culture. Professor Bradley, can you tell us where's the best place to find your book? I know folks will be looking
for it. It's on Amazon. They've been selling so well that Amazon kind of ran out for a while. But I think they should be. Amazon's a good place to check. There are other booksellers as well.
And is there a website that folks can go to?
Just Amazon.com, but they could go to University of California Press as well. Go directly to the press, and they have a website.
Okay.
University of California Press has already said they're going to go into a second printing, so they should be available. The other thing I would like to point out is that this book is written both for the profession and the lay public, so it's approachable by most people. It's not a heavy academic book.
That means that the Bob and I here at the Roadhouse could be able to follow it, okay?
You could probably follow the beginning and the end. I don't know about the middle.
Well, there you go. Well, Professor Bradley, we want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight. I know it's quite late where you are, and also helping us out with our telephone problems, which we expect to get back to you on, and want to wish you a good night and best of luck with as you move forward.
Very good. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.